This is a rain replay.
In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, this is the Rain Report. I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK. The subject of propagation is a word that is commonly bandied about whenever hams get together. For the newbies among us, here's a look at basic propagation from the 2011 Dayton Hamvention by Ruben Meeks, W8GUC. Ruben holds master's degrees in electronics and worked his entire career with the Department of Defense in almost all aspects of radio theory and application. Here's an excerpt from Ruben's talk.
My name is Ruben Meeks. I'm originally from California, and that's why this crazy accent, right? Southern Cal. Got my license back in 57 in high school, right out of Los Angeles, and from there up to Sacramento and the Air Force. 30-plus years later with the Air Force and with the DOD and various experimental labs and various places and black programs and et cetera, doing RF interference, antenna design. I've had my hands directly in the warfare, and so I can speak with a little experience. The whole thing with RF and antennas, you can spend $1,000 on a good system. Nowadays, with all the stuff out there, you can find a $5,000 rig in a flash. But it won't do you any good if you don't have the proper transfer method. In our case here, we're looking for an antenna, whether it be a dipole. If you got a receiver close by, you can even use a dummy load and radiate out of it if it's leaking. You wonder why your $5,000 rig can't talk to Japan, which on some occasions is like next door. See, the whole thing is propagation is a setup of just mirrors. And if you don't find the right mirror at the right time, you might as well just sit back and talk to your neighbor or something. In all of our studies here, as we discuss propagation, we'll find that the various frequencies find the various layers. They have various wavelengths. You all know the story, wavelength, and the travel speed of light, just a hair under 300,000 meters per second. So with that kind of knowledge, and you know the theory on wavelength, as far as antenna links go, and if they're not matched for the proper frequency, for the proper layer in the ionosphere, stratosphere, wherever, you're not going to go anywhere. Sometimes you can just take, depending upon the frequency, you can take a piece of metal, hang it on the wall, bounce it off around a corner. That'd be the microwave or even light with a mirror. You can bounce it off. Particular frequencies will do that. Can we have the various gamma rays, X-rays, visible, IR, and radio? You have your ultraviolet to infrared and all the other stuff in between. And we, as a little spectrum here, we have our little segments, and if we're not careful, by the way, let me give a little pitch for our frequencies, folks. We're being encroached by a lot of public officials out there that are trying to take away your frequencies, our rights. And I know it's a lot of hassle at times there. While you hate to fill out paper or send in an email, but to your congressman, they're looking at stealing our frequencies. How many folks are from California, Northern Cal, wherever? A couple. And you've heard of the PAYPAWS, and I've dealt with that program. I used to work that with Air Force. It's nothing but an over-the-horizon type of a reflection device to find every little gnat's eyebrow in the sky, whether it be junk or whether it be a missile. So the sensitivity is a requirement. And they're looking in the 400 meg spectrum. So what do you think? We've got our UHF repeaters up there. So it's Northern Cal. They brought them down to just milliwatts of power, practically. Number one, they weren't using that much, and the repeaters, one of our problems we've had is that a lot of repeaters were starting to turn into trash, trashing one another. So that's another thing we've got to watch out for, that we don't downgrade ourselves and be our worst enemy. In my early days, we used to even bounce, we call it EME, and that was in 1296, where we'd use the moon on a full moon. We'd have 16 arrays, Yagis, stacked together, pointing at the moon, and 5-10 seconds later, we hear a little echo coming back, and that was back in the 60s, and we're still doing that today. Our spectrums are VLF, and a lot of the things that I do have done with the Air Force and various other groups below the broadcast bands, there are a lot of things, whether it be on a submarine or for whatever use, sonar or whatever, we have spectrums and a transfer method. If it be the low frequencies, we're using the water as a medium. The medium is the water. It's our conducting device. It's our waveguide. It's our coax. And as we get higher, we start to use other means to transfer, whether it be a piece of coax, point to point, or whether we use a radiator, as Frank was demonstrating with the dipole. And everything needs to be close to the frequency, either in wavelength, quarter wave, half wave. However, they need to be in multiples so that you can get that particular wavelength. Obviously, 100% reflection of the same type antenna is ideal, but who has an ideal antenna with the other person? Nobody. One guy may be transmitting vertical using a vertical stick, and I have at my QTH here in Dayton, I have a vertical all band from 160, 130 foot in height, and I can quarter wave it on down and catch low frequencies and multiples to 10 meters on that thing. But the other guy may be on horizontal plane. He may be using a Yagi pointing the other way. Just an automatic 20 dB or thereabouts attenuation between polarizations, whether you go vertical, horizontal, horizontal, vertical. You automatically have a loss. So there are other methods to make up for the loss, either like the collinear or the helix, where it spirals, it's got a little bit of vertical, horizontal, a little in between, so that, like they use for the satellites out in the sky. All the way to our EHF stuff, and we do a lot of EHF stuff in the black program where we are up in the sky and we don't have to worry about blockage of a signal from a tall building. We're looking at either a shuttle, a satellite, or the spy in the sky, but we're using the super high frequencies there, all the way up to the IRs and all the other good things that we can do point to point.
You are listening to an excerpt from a talk on propagation basics by Ruben Meeks, W8GUC, given during the 2011 Daytonhamvention. We'll continue Ruben's presentation in a moment. This is the RAN Report, which usually updates on Fridays, but not always, on therainreport.com. The RAN Report can be downloaded from or listened to on www.therainreport.com. We'll be right back.
Line of sight, ground wave, or sky wave? Line of sight, depending upon the frequency, you're going to be A-OK. UHF, 2 meters, 220, usually a line of sight is going to get you there, no problem. Before we start to lose you is when we either get it blocked by a building or whatever, then we have to use methods of how we're going to propagate from one point to the other. Higher the frequency, the more reflection devices you need, whether it be a fiber optic tube or whether it be a piece of waveguide to a transitional thing to free space. Or when we get down to the HF, you're going to find from 2 megahertz to 6 meters, you're going to find that sky waves now are going to play a part, because most people can't, because of the curvature of the Earth, there is no point to point unless you're next door or something. So we're going to depend upon the sky and a particular layer of the sky to be our mirror. And usually I tell folks, you don't want more than 6 hops, because by the time you get a 6th hop or so, it's pretty much down to the noise, unless you spent a whole lot of money for an LNA type thing. The form of propagation is influenced by many means, whether it be chemical. There are times where you'll find that, how many have ever worked a meteor trail? Anybody in this room worked? Very good. There were times we have worked the meteor trail. It's just a piece of stuff, electrons that are charged up in a particular manner, so it acts like a mirror. You can hit that trail, and it's like your antenna point. It hits that ionized sky piece, and it reflects down. So whether it be if you have a UHF signal and a cloud layer on a foggy day, you can use a tunneling effect on UHF, and you can go from here to Chicago on 2 meters. Normally, you cannot do that. You can see television on a good day with the right type of fog. I'm talking about fog that's not dense to the ground, but a layer of give you a tunneling effect like a piece of waveguide. The signal hits the fog, and it's just going down this waveguide fog from here to Chicago. I've done that many a time. Or on the other days, when the signals are hitting space, you're going to have to find yourself finding the right layer And many of you have wondered, wait, I spent $5,000 on this setup here. I got the best Yagi, got the best tower, and I can't hear squat. Well, you can't, because certain times of the days, the moon, the sun, and all these play a part. We have so many programs with the government that are freebies. AWOL has them, and we'll show you where you can find all these programs. You can find them from the Navy, the Army, the Air Force, on what programs, and they're all free. And all these particular log programs that you can find will give you the information as to what time of the day, what frequency you need to find your transfer method. So if you don't find anything on, say, 20 meters at 6 o'clock in the morning, wait till maybe 11 o'clock, and all of a sudden the right layer hits, and you can go from here to Russia with no problem at all. They're like they're next door. Or give it another 15 minutes, it goes away, and then 10 meters picks up. There are a number of methods that we use to find out the propagation for the day. We have what is called beacons. How many depend upon a beacon for some of your methods? Anybody? Show of hands. Good, good. Beacons are there for that purpose. They're put at strategic points around the world, and if you want to know what frequency is going to be open, they got these programs that'll listen to these beacons. They'll switch around, and all of a sudden you hear Italy coming in, bang, S9 and taller. Then you know it's time to get the rig going. Or you listen to your internet hookup, and they'll tell you what bands are going. We have all these good people that are out there giving you that information. The ionization or the sky wave is primarily due to the ionization of Earth in the upper atmosphere. High energy radiation from our sun strikes atoms and causes these various vapors to get charged in particular ways. Depending upon how it's charged, it can either add or it can take away. There are days when the sunspots go crazy and you won't hear a thing. All you hear is a bunch of noise. QRM is gone crazy, and all you hear is somebody with a spark gap generator type noise on your receiver. And you wonder what's going on. Well, you have to think about it. The sun is like that old Model T Ford used to be. You could always tell when the car was coming down the block. You would turn on your radio, and all of a sudden your TV would go to 8, and your picture would go. Now, I'm dating myself. We've got the digitals now, but back in the early days, your radios would go nothing but noise when the Model T would go by, and your television would just go crazy. But the same thing happens. It can overload your receiver to the point where you've got more energy from the sun or the charged particles that are causing the overload, that all it hears is that, and your receiver cannot hear that little 5 microvolt signal you're trying to pick up.
And that concludes this excerpt from a talk on propagation basics given by Ruben Meeks, W8GUC, at the 2011 Dayton Hamvention. Now for RAIN's founder and producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, I am Byron Lee, KC9EEK, bidding you all a very 73 from all of us at the Radio Amateur Information Network.
The RAIN Report is copyright 1990-2014 RAIN, all rights reserved.